It's 1 o'clock, having arrived. I'm going to call the March 30th, 2022 meeting of the House Taxes Committee to order. Under rules 10.01, and again, to those viewing this meeting, if you want to find all the materials that we have, go on the computer, go to the website, Minnesota House of Representatives, go to committee and divisions, go to taxes, and then on that home page to the right-hand side, scroll down, you'll find all of that. So with that, Ms. Griska, please call the roll.
Representative Marquardt.
Marquardt present.
Representative Marquardt present. Representative Lislegard.
Lislegard present.
Representative Lislegard present. Representative David.
David's present.
Representative David's present. Representative Agbaje.
Present.
Representative Agbaje present. Representative Carlson.
Carlson present.
Representative Carlson present. Representative Detmer.
Detmer present.
Representative Detmer present. Representative Garofalo.
Garofalo present.
Representative Garofalo present. Representative Gomez.
Gomez present.
Representative Gomez present. Representative Herr.
Herr present.
Representative Herr present. Representative Hertas.
Hertas present.
Representative Hertas present. Representative Howard.
Howard present.
Representative Howard present. Representative McDonald.
McDonald present.
Representative McDonald present. Representative Miller.
Miller present.
Representative Miller present. Representative Moran.
Moran is present.
Representative Moran present. Representative Mortensen.
Mortensen present.
Representative Mortensen present. Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Robbins present. Representative Sundell.
Present.
Representative Sundell present. Representative Schultz.
Present.
Representative Schultz present. Representative Stevenson.
Present.
Representative Stevenson present. Representative Swazinski.
Present.
Representative Swazinski present. Representative Joachim.
Present.
Representative Joachim present. We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Ms. Griska. Representative Lislegard, would you like to make a motion to approve the March 29th, 2022 minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. Representative Lislegard moves approval of the minutes. Is there any discussion, thoughts, changes? If not, I'm going to call for a vote on the Lislegard motion. Temporarily unmute yourselves. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The March 29th, 2022 minutes are approved. So, members, we have three bills up today, and all three bills are authored by either the current chair or the past chair. So I would expect there's going to be almost no controversy, no questions asked of the authors today. No, just kidding. So we will start out with House File 3967. Chair David, would you like to move your bill?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the bill, and I do like your plan.
Very good. Thank you. Representative Chair Davids moves House File 3967 to be laid over for possible inclusion. Please proceed. Welcome to your own committee.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have an amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like. It should be an A1 amendment, I believe.
Yes. Would you like to move that?
If we could, sir.
All right. Chair Davids moves the A1 amendment. Is that just kind of get it in the form that you will talk about later, or did you want to explain?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. No, that gets in the form we need it to be in.
All right, members, I would ask that we vote on the A1 amendment. Temporarily unmute yourselves. All those in favor of the A1 amendment, please say aye.
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 Those opposed, say nay. The motion does prevail. The A1 amendment is adopted. Chair Davids, to your bill as amended.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. This bill provides needed fixes to the pass-through entity tax. The changes will expand the number of qualifying entities and owners who are eligible to lower their federal income tax burdens. And what I understand, there's no cost to the state. The department may have some comments on that. I want to certainly hear what they have to say on that. And Mr. Chairman, I want to thank you because there's in last year's special session omnibus tax bill that this provision was included. We just need to make a few changes to it so it, more people can benefit from it. The supporters of the bill, the NFIB, the chamber, and of course the CPAs support this. And my information shows that it supports small business at no cost to the state. I think the department may have looked at something that they may have questions on that, and we'll want to hear from them. What it does, we update the pass-through entity tax filing option to include all income earned by a qualified owner. Small businesses would be able to take a greater federal deduction, Mr. Chairman. And our friends to the east and to the southeast, Wisconsin, Illinois, have already taken this approach. And I think we should do, I think we should pass my bill, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you so much. And we have some testifiers. And we will, would that be all right to move to the testifiers at this
time? Yes, Mr. Chairman.
So we have Joseph Schwartz, and then Todd Cook is on deck. So Joseph Schwartz, there you are. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and please proceed.
Thanks for the warm welcome. And thank you, Chair, honorable members of the committee, for the opportunity to present testimony in support of HF 3967. For the record, my name is Joseph Schwartz, Director and Counsel of Managed Funds Association, or MFA. MFA represents the global alternative investment industry and its investors by advocating for regulatory, tax, and other public policies that foster efficient, transparent, and fair capital markets. Our more than 150 members collectively manage funds on behalf of public and private pension plans, university endowments, charitable foundations, and others. HF 3967 contains two technical amendments to the elective pass-through entity tax, a state revenue neutral measure which shifts the imposition of tax from individual business owners to the entities through which they conduct their business. In doing so, it allows the individuals to deduct for federal income tax purposes the full share of state taxes paid as a result of recognizing income from their business. These elective pass-through entity taxes, as noted, are now common among states as a response to federal legislation enacted in 2017, which generally limits the deductibility of state taxes for federal income tax purposes to $10,000. Importantly, in November 2020, the IRS gave its approval as to the effectiveness of these elective taxes. The technical amendments in the bill relate first to eligibility and second to the income of Minnesota residents. To begin with eligibility, under current law, pass-through entities with other pass-through entities as partners may not elect into the tax. Minnesota is one of three states, to my knowledge, which currently imposes this kind of restriction. The existence of what are called tiered partnerships is a common fact pattern across many types of businesses and many industries, and most typically is used to limit liability, facilitate further investment, and align tax results with economic outcomes. We're generally in support of expanding eligibility for the elective tax to capture these common arrangements present in Minnesota businesses. Second, the income of Minnesota residents. Under current law, the elective tax does not distinguish between the taxation of a Minnesota resident and a Minnesota non-resident, and in effect treats Minnesota residents as if they were non-residents. Specifically, Minnesota residents, by virtue of enjoying the protections of Minnesota law, are taxable on their worldwide taxable income, whereas non-residents are taxable only on their Minnesota source taxable income. As a result, Minnesota residents do not receive the full benefit of shifting the imposition of tax from themselves to their businesses. Rather, they receive some fractional amount based on the level of business they conduct in-state when compared to the level of business they conduct everywhere. This amount is received as a credit, but is unable to fully offset the tax they otherwise owe to Minnesota in their individual capacity. Ultimately, Minnesota residents are likely to still be subject to the federal cap, and we are generally in support of aligning the elective tax computation of a Minnesota resident's income with the longstanding computation of a Minnesota resident's income under the personal income tax. To summarize, supporting this bill ultimately does three things. First, it ensures that Minnesota resident business owners can maximize their federal tax savings. Second, it does so without any cost to the state. Third, it keeps the Minnesota business environment competitive on the state tax landscape with its neighbors and nationwide with similar elective taxes. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to speak. I'm glad to answer any questions you may have.
Very good. Thank you very much, Mr. Swartz. And I would ask all the testifiers to please stick around in case there are questions later on. Todd Cook and then Joanna Bears is on deck. Welcome to the committee. And I don't know if I pronounced that last name correctly, and I apologize if I did not, but please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Todd Koch, but it does mean Cook in German, so you interpreted it appropriately. My name is Todd Koch. I'm a partner at the CPA firm of John A. Knutson & Company. I also am a member of the MNCPA and proud to work with many flow-through entities as small businesses and their and the owners and they and the owners. The Joseph did a very good job of summarizing many of the points. I just want to bring out a couple other things. We're in support of what he said, but there's a couple things. If you look, that it may look like it's restrictive, in that we're not allowing sole proprietors the same advantage. That is not unique to Minnesota law. It's the way the IRS has written the rule. The rule cannot be used by sole proprietors. So please do not look at that as a negative. The second thing is that in there, the original statute that was passed in July had that this bill was tied directly back to the a limitation on the income tax deductibility. This bill would remove that direct tie. And the reason for that is to eliminate uncertainty. This uncertainty is very important because the election to file on whether or not you are going to pay this pass-through entity tax has to be made before your individual income taxes are due. So if this election has to be made before you have figured out whether or not anyone has had a limitation, it is important to remove that, to eliminate that uncertainty that happens in there. Also by looking back to a statute that's fixed in a moment in time, if that statute is amended, as we're finding out all too frequently, our brethren in Washington, D.C. tend to amend tax provisions late in the year. It's very difficult for anyone to know really what year they should be looking at. So by eliminating that provision, we're making things less uncertain for taxpayers. And just to reiterate too, this helps small businesses, small Main Street businesses, to be taxed similar to Wall Street businesses. Wall Street businesses can deduct all their taxes on their business. This allows Main Street businesses the same type of treatment. And we like that you're looking at Main Street businesses to be like Wall Street businesses and treating them similarly. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Koch. Next, we have Joanna Bears from the Department of Revenue.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Ms. Bears, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Joanna Bears, and I'm the Legislative Director for the Minnesota Department of Revenue. I'll say a few words, and then I can address the comments Representative David's had about the revenue estimate. First, this bill does make changes to the pass-through entity tax that was enacted last session and began in tax year 2021. And as you may all recall, the pass-through entity tax was enacted as a workaround to the temporary federal cap on state and local tax deductions for individuals. The federal cap is set to sunset in 2025. These state workaround provisions were generally approved by the Internal Revenue Service under Revenue Notice 2020-75. However, further detailed regulatory guidance has not been issued yet. We expect more guidance to be issued in the near future. You also may recall that the current pass-through entity tax is a compromise language we worked on with stakeholders. And last year, when we were working through this language, our goal was to first ensure the department could administer this type of workaround. Second, the change we were making were following federal guidance in Revenue Notice 2020-75. And third, the workaround provided the benefit to the intended parties under the guidance. As I mentioned, this bill makes several changes to the current pass-through entity tax, including expanding the types of entities that can make the election and changes the calculation of the pass-through entity tax. We appreciate that the bill does include two technical changes that were also included in our the department's policy and technical bill. And those changes are on page 1, lines 21 and 22, and page 4, lines 17 through 21. However, we do have some concerns with the provisions that increase the complexity of the tax and related credit. For example, the changes on page 2, lines 7 through 9, remove the safeguards enacted last year. These safeguards are to prevent entities owned by other entities as opposed to individual estates and certain trusts from making the pass-through election entity or the pass-through entity election. Allowing the election to be made by these tiered partnerships would increase the complexity of this provision and be difficult to administer. However, as with any new law enacted, especially when it's complex, we understand that there's needs to update the law to ensure we are achieving the intent. We have engaged with stakeholders on these changes, and we are committed to working with and continuing the conversation with stakeholders and members on suggested changes to the pass-through entity tax. And then I'd like to address Representative David's question. The reason there's an unknown cost is because this modify an owner's AGI, which can impact how much Minnesota tax is paid. And because it touches the AGI, we had to switch to an unknown cost. Now, we can't determine the cost because this pass-through entity tax is a new tax, and it's just its first year. And so we don't have all the information to determine actually what the impact would be to Minnesota. So about this time next year, we should have more information about what the impact would be.
Ms. Bears, thank you so much. And so before we go to questions, I do, the revenue estimate was at unknown, as Ms. Bears mentioned, but just last year in the House Omnibus Tax Bill, and ultimately in state law, when in the state law, this was Chair David's bill, this was in there, this SALT workaround. And we think it's been very, very successful. The idea was at no cost to the state, how can we help these businesses on their federal returns? And what we're seeing right now is there's a group called the Main Street Employers, and they're assuming 50% participation at a 30% federal tax rate, that the federal tax savings on this workaround is their projections $199.8 million. And so I've seen another one from $150 million. So, I mean, these savings could be $150 to almost $200 million right now for businesses through this workaround. And right now, the Department of Revenue, because they haven't got a full year, can't really tell us that quite yet. But we do know that in the MMB forecast, $1.2 billion of kind of the variance from year date to date that was in that forecast report, $1.2 billion, has to do with pass-through entity kind of early payments. And we're thinking they try to get in on 2021 painters so they could become part of the federal plan. So this has been highly successful. And I think as a committee, what we want to do, and as Representative Bears mentioned, I mean, last year, Representative Chair Davids mentioned, is that, you know, we put something in place last year, and I think it's working. But, you know, we always kind of learn after first year when we put a lot of new things in, what changes or tweaks need to be made. So I'm committed that we do that, and it's, Ms. Bears, it's good to hear, you know, the department kind of willing to work things through and see what we can do and keep peace in the valley, if you will, but also make sure we get as close to the intent of what we want to do with this bill as we meant for last year. So so thank you for all the testifiers on this. So anyone else, first of all, that wants to testify on House File 3967 as amended? I don't see any. So members, you can ignore what I said early on. You actually can ask a question with a former chair or current chair. So, all right. Seeing none, Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I really appreciate the support. I know it'll be laid over on this House file as amended, which is House File 3967. And I want to just comment, I want to thank Joanna Bears for working with us on this. And I'm very pleased that the department is working with interested parties here. It has to work. The department has to be able to make it work. And that's what they're looking at right now. And we want to certainly support them in those efforts. So thank you so much for the hearing, Mr. Chairman. I think it's a good idea to make the improvements here on what we did last year and move forward.
Very good. Thank you so much. With that, the chair will lay over House File 3967 as amended. Thank you to all the testifiers. Next, I'm going to turn the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Lessigar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. The next item on the agenda is House File 4198. Chair Marcourt, would you like to move your bill for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move House File 4198 for possible inclusion into the House Omnibus Tax Bill.
Thank you. Chair Marcourt, please present your bill.
So, well, thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members. I'm actually pretty excited about this bill because it really matches up with one of the goals that we've talked about in committee, and that's addressing the workforce shortage. And, you know, we've talked about this a lot. In fact, in almost every committee, people are talking about the workforce shortage, and it, you know, it's led to supply chain disruptions, you know, inflation. You talk to almost any occupation and they're looking for workers. You know, where a lot of times you go to a business and they might be advertising their latest sale. Now you go and it's, you know, hiring. You know, that's what's on their board by their business. And so, you know, a couple reasons, of course, for this is you've got baby boomers like myself who are retiring and not a lot number of enough young people to replace us. And our demographers have been talking about this for 20 years, where our new employee growth in the workforce is almost going to come to a grinding halt, which is the projection for this decade. And the other thing is, if you kind of dive into the domestic migration numbers that our demographer has put out along with House Research in 2015 and 2018, three quarters of the net out migration is 18 to 24 year olds. It's people leaving for school or whatever. And a lot of these young people come back, but not enough. So what this bill does is really addresses this severe workforce crisis or shortage by creating a strong pipeline of workers into high demand, high wage jobs. And also on top of that, bringing some that are currently in our workforce and upskilling them with a emphasis on minorities, on those underskilled, new Minnesotans, those unemployed, and that's kind of the gist of it. So what does it do? House File 4198 really creates a unique, innovative model, which is something called a Community Career Workforce Academy. And the uniqueness part of it is it brings our high schools through the career academies, which are out there in our high schools, brings our two-year colleges, our four-year colleges, our business sector, our nonprofits, and our elected officials all together in forming one concise plan on how to address this workforce shortage. So it zeroes in on what is a plan. So you haven't got the schools doing something. You haven't got the 2 and 4 year colleges doing things, dealing with getting students into the high demand, high career workforce. You haven't got business. They're all working together on one unified plan. And it centers around our career academies and it centers on our students. And so our students are still, they're getting a rigorous, relevant, individualized education that will give them a job skill into a high demand, high wage field, and an opportunity to earn a post-secondary credential or degree. It's kind of a seamless path for our students from ninth grade on to get in to a career or a workforce. And on top of that, then using adult education to bring in adults who are underemployed or unemployed and matching them to the skills that they need. So with that, how this would work is that counties, it'd be countywide, they would have to, working with all these entities, come up with one plan, and then they would provide a proposal to DEEP, the Department of Employment and Economic Development. They would have to have this unified workforce talent plan. They'd have to show that they have the facility needs. They'd have to show that they've got programming needs. And they would put this into a proposal. DEEP then would rate these, and there would be a maximum in the grants of $40 million. And you know, what would be the reason for these grants or why these community career workforce academies would need this? Well, first of all, it would include all the school districts in the county. So you've got several school districts that could be part of this. You also need startup costs to be able to retrofit your facilities and buildings. You also would need to change your programming, which also there would be a cost there, and to develop new situations. So I have set aside in this bill $10 million for the Moorhead Career Workforce Academy. And they were the folks that approached me with this concept and this idea. And we've got the superintendent who's here in a second and others to talk about this. But they are ready to go with this plan, which I think is unique among the state. And they're ready to go. They need assistance to make this totally work. This could certainly be a pilot, even though there's dollars to do several others if there's ready to go and get this going. The bottom line is we want results. So DEED would be required to do a report by 2024 to say, hey, are these academies doing what they said they were going to do? We want results. And so what are the benefits? The benefits is that every student, before they would leave high school or 2 or 4 year college, would have the opportunity to learn a skill and be able to hit the ground running. It would be a way to keep these students in Minnesota, because they would be linked to a job right away, because businesses have been working. Our employers would have a match of the skills that they need. They would have a workforce ready to go. And everyone's on the same page. That is the real strength of this. It requires everyone to be on and bring all of their power into one effort. So this is no doubt, I think, would greatly benefit our economy, our community, our state, and address this severe workforce shortage. So members, you've got letters of support from a coalition of businesses and local governments and colleges in your packets. But I also have a couple testifiers, and I have Brandon Lunick, who's superintendent of Moorhead Public Schools, to talk about the need and what they're doing. And then also Catherine Grinberg, who would represent the local Chamber of Commerce in the area. I also, on the meeting, if they're open for question, would be Clay County Commissioner Jenny Mojo, president of Minnesota State University at Moorhead, Ann Blackhurst, and the president of Minn State Community College, Carrie Brimhall. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's my presentation. If we could please move to our testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Here to testify today is Brandon Lunick. Please welcome to the committee and state your name and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Brandon Lunick. I'm the superintendent of the Moorhead Area Public Schools. And like Paul was stating earlier, our region, like many others across Minnesota, are struggling with a severe workforce shortage. And as an educational partner, we want to work alongside our business, our nonprofit, our higher education, and other community partners to continue to explore and develop innovative solutions to address our workforce shortage. And two of those major efforts, like Paul stated, are to create a strong pipeline of workers in the in-demand fields, but we also want to upscale our current workforce with an emphasis on our minority populations and our new Minnesota citizens in the underskilled workforce. To do this, it not only includes our 912 student population, but we believe that we can also serve our 19 plus population as well through our adult basic ed programming and our community ed program itself. And working with our nonprofit, the business, the higher ed partners, we believe that we can get them the necessary equipment and training to support these specific populations and programs. The programming funds that we're hoping will be supported will support the creation of this program across our community and across our county and our region. And we believe that this programming that we can offer will enhance the livelihoods of many of those in our region that are looking to either upscale or find their way into the workforce pipeline, which we believe will lead to quality livelihoods. Our future 9-12 students and adult learners through our Career Academy will have incredible opportunities to explore their potential, discover their passion, and work towards industry certifications to gain the real work skills ultimately impacting the Moorhead community, our region, and the state of Minnesota, and possibly much beyond that, and what I would consider have a worldly impact. At the Career Academy, we already have 974 of our 912 students enrolled in at least one class and of an in-demand field. In order to achieve our goals, further build out of the space would permit us to expand our offerings and capacity for not just our 912 students, but our adult learners as well. And although we have the potential to train adult learners, currently we have limited community education opportunities, most of which don't align with the current workforce demands. We are extremely excited for the opportunity to use these programs in a manner that's different or non-traditional than what we've seen in the past. And Moorhead Area Public Schools is excited to be a part of this and potentially help taking the lead on this programming. Robust lab spaces are included for buildings trades. We're looking at automotive and small engine repair, metal fabrication, and carpentry, along with several other large flexible spaces for STEM courses such as engineering, robotics, and aviation. This funding will allow the completion of these lab spaces to further support our workforce development needs in childcare, healthcare, machining, small engine repair, avionics, and aviation, and potentially for careers that we haven't even identified yet. We believe that through collaborative learning, the student engagement, and the adult engagement through these authentic experiences will be the core of what we are going to use to reimagine our education for every student adult in our district as our community continues to grow and becomes more diverse. Innovative changes to this curriculum and the adoption of this new model will enable both students and adults to have improved access to career pathways and programming. Regional workforce development and expanded educational opportunities are what we believe to be the key drivers behind the concept of our Regional Career Academy. I thank you for your time, and I'll be available for further questions at the end.
Thank you, Mr. Lunick. Next up, we have Catherine Grinberg. Please welcome to the committee, Ms. Grinberg, and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Les Lagarde. My name is Catherine Grinberg, and I serve as the Vice President of Public Policy for the Fargo-Moorhead West Fargo Chamber of Commerce. It is our mission to 1,800 members and serve as a catalyst for economic growth and prosperity for businesses, our members, and the greater community through the work that we do through our cornerstones of business vitality, public policy and advocacy, talent and workforce, community engagement, and organizational excellence. This afternoon, I come before the committee to express our overwhelming support of House File 4198. This bill brings our high schools, 2- and 4-year colleges, businesses, nonprofits, and elected officials together to create and implement one unified strategy and plan to address our critical workforce needs. Through the support of community-based workforce solutions like career academies, our state could continue to address the growing demand for skilled laborers. As we've talked to businesses throughout the community, their number one issue by far is the lack of workforce. From welders to nurses, semi-drivers to teachers, and every job in between, our businesses are struggling to hire qualified individuals. While this issue continues to plague communities across our state and our nation, we must work together in creating a unified strategy to identify solutions for this challenge. Community Career Workforce Academies are an opportunity for private-public partnerships to thrive and for the state of Minnesota to address the workforce challenge head-on. Our society has begun to realize that a post-secondary career path is not for every student, especially with the growing demand for skilled laborers. States like North Dakota have already begun spending millions of dollars on career workforce academies to address the critical workforce issue. For example, during the 2021 legislative session in North Dakota, the state appropriated over $80 million in matching funds to career academies across the state. To overcome this widespread workforce challenge, we must create a robust learning environment, promoting career exploration and striving for choice-ready graduates. Moreover, to overcome this widespread challenge, the state of Minnesota must work to continue to make investments in creative workforce solutions. The Moorhead Career Workforce Academy in Clay County is an extraordinary example of innovative solutions that exist in the state of Minnesota. With the financial support outlined in this bill, new and existing academies can expand access to Minnesota residents and underskilled workers. If there's one thing that you take away from my testimony today, it is that workforce challenges will not be solved individually. It can only be solved as a community, and this bill ensures collaboration of all stakeholders, including elected officials, high schools, 2 and 4-year colleges, businesses, and nonprofits. I also direct your attention to the coalition letter that you should have received, which indicates the strong support of over 25 of the business and community partners that are working with us. The Chamber is committed to combating workforce issues and stands ready to partner with other stakeholders to tackle this issue. As such, we support House File 4198 and respectfully urge you to do the same. Thank you for your service to the great state of Minnesota and your attention to this critical workforce issue.
Thank you so much, Ms. Grinberg. I do understand that there are some other people able to answer questions if needed. So is there anyone else who would like to testify? Seeing none, any questions for the chair? I remind you to be careful. It is the chair. I feel like Bueller. Anyone? Okay, closing comments. Chair Marquardt.
Mr. Chair, looks like Chair Joachim has a question.
Chair Joachim.
Thank you. Sorry, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, thank you for this bill. Career academies across our state are amazing. I've had a chance to visit them up in Bemidji and down in Rochester and all over, and they really do get our kids off to a good start, but it's hard for districts to do this alone. It takes a lot of time and investment, and the thought of being able to partner with the county to help them get these things off the ground. And also wanted to highlight the fact that I like the way you've structured it, because these academies need to be grown organically within the community according to the jobs and the job sectors they're seeing in their own community. So I just want to say thank you. Good bill.
Anyone else? Seeing no further questions, Chair Marquardt, do you have any final words on your bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chair Joachim, for those nice comments. And that is the real strength of this, is you had these folks, Mr. Lunick and Ms. Grinberg and President Brimhall is on the Zoom today. I'm here because of them, because they are working on this. They saw this vision. And I think this is the way to go, because you've got everyone working together. We're not reinventing the wheel. It's working through an existing system, but doing it much stronger, make it more inclusive, and all moving in the right direction. So appreciate the committee listening to the bill, and appreciate all the testifiers and everyone who's come together to make this a reality. So thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Okay, with that, Chair Marquardt renews his motion that House File 4198 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. The next item on the agenda is House File 4513. Chair Marquardt, would you like to move your bill to be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 4513, and then I do have an amendment.
Yep, you have A1 amendment. Would you like to briefly describe your amendment?
Yes, and so, Mr. Chair, I'll move the A1 amendment. And what this amendment does is it does not say that the Office of Legislative Auditor must do this. It makes a request. So it changes everything from a must to a request, which is the proper way to do that. So I didn't have that all drafted the right language, but it's a request rather than a must. So I'll ask for approval from members.
Okay, so all those in favor of the A1 amendment, can you please unmute? All those in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries with enthusiasm. Chair Marquardt, please present your bill as amended.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. So this bill came out of a conversation that Senator Eakin and Representative Keeler and myself were having with area farmers. And, you know, we were kind of talking about what the county does and so forth and property tax. That was the big focus. And the one thing that thought about is that these mandated services that the state says to the counties that you have to do, those wind up going on people's property taxes. And my thinking is, you know, these mandated services that the state, it's benefit, you know, it's because the state is mandating it, the state should cover the costs. I mean, this is an age old unfunded mandates and so forth. And if the state covers the cost, that would reduce property taxes and cost savings for the county that would ultimately get the property taxpayers. So the thing we thought about, and I've worked also with the Association of Minnesota Counties and Mr. Hilgert, who is going to be testifying, is great on this, is trying to find out what are those costs? Mainly, I suppose, are through Health and Human Service. What are these mandated costs? And no one's arguing that these are not functions that should be done. They should. But if the state's mandated, the state should cover the cost. And so what this bill does, it focuses on, in working with Mr. Hilgert and the counties, focuses on kind of one item, which they thought is kind of one of the big ones. And that's child protection services. So the bill would ask the OLA to say, you know, what's the roles and responsibility as compared to other states for this, for counties? What is the amount counties spend on child protection services? And what is the federal and state amount that's received? And how much are the counties paying in property taxes because of this? So again, no one's arguing about child protection services and its importance. It is, if it's mandated by the state should be covering it, and it shouldn't be handled through local property taxes. So that's what we want to find out, is what are the numbers here, and that would kind of be a start. So that's it, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Chair Marquardt. Here to testify is Matt Hilgren with the Association of Municipalities or Minnesota Counties. Please welcome to the committee. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Liz Lagarde. My name is Matt Hilgert, and I work for the Association of Minnesota Counties. Thanks, Chair Marquardt, for offering this proposal. You did an awesome job of explaining what it is. It's a pretty quick study, and admittingly so, you know, it is, we don't know what the findings will say. And I know some folks might say it's dangerous to ask for a study if you don't know what the outcomes will be. But our membership is very interested in this, from Hennepin County all the way up to Wadena County. As Chair Marquardt said, I think at one point Senator Gazelka was carrying a bill similar to this. I had talked with past auditor Nobles about doing something like this, and it had been, I think, one of the finalists in 2019 for one of the audit commission's reports. We have changed the scope a little bit. At first, this started as just a general assessment of health and human service mandates, but the word mandate is pretty loose and open to interpretation. And so we thought from an auditor's perspective that it would be better to narrow the scope so that there would be identifiable data sets to actually have uniform data. Now, I want to apologize to Auditor Randall because I have not introduced myself to her in her new role. And this is not something that we kind of refreshed the auditor's office on, something that we'd like to do. So I will commit to talking to Auditor Randall to make sure that this is in the form that her office thinks would be potentially doable. And again, we just want to thank committee members for their support of this. It really will point out what we think will be some kind of gap in which property taxpayers are picking up a substantial amount of the costs of child protection across the state. So I will end my comments there and be available for questions if anyone has any. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Chair Marquardt or the testifiers? Seeing no questions, Chair Marquardt, do you have any final words on your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Hilgert, for that good review of kind of what we've been talking about. The revenue estimate is unknown, of course, at this time, but you know, it wouldn't be a huge amount. So, members, I think it's getting an idea of kind of it relates back to property taxes and what's the local role and what's the state role. As far as how that impacts your property taxes. So appreciate your support. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, Chair Marquardt renews his motion that House File 4513 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. I will now return this invisible gavel back over to Chair Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Chair Leslegard. Chair Davids, or Vice Chair Leslegard, Chair Davids.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just before we adjourn, Mr. Chairman, just got a question. We've got some big days coming up in taxes, and we'll be talking about a lot of money. And I just wondered where we're at on the targets at this point.
Thank you, Chair David. So next week when we have, so right now there has been nothing that has been publicized on targets, nor has there been any sort of a resolution on targets. So, and I think both of those will be coming shortly, but for the tax bill next week, and again, the schedule will be that it will be posted on Monday, and then we'll go over it on Tuesday with testimony on Wednesday and then markup on Thursday. There will not be a target. So you're going to, you know, when you see the bill in the spreadsheet, there is going to be a number there for the 22-23 biennium and for the 24-25 biennium. And so you'll be able to, I guess, figure out what is the target for the tax committee, but that there won't be a resolution prior to that or anything.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Very good, thank you. So tomorrow we have some more bills, and then just a reminder that on Friday we will meet from 10:30 till 12:30 on Friday, and we're hoping there's a number of kind of bills towards the end that kind of come in that we need to hear and so forth, so hopefully we can get through those bills.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Swadzinski.
Yeah, just on Friday, will we be moving bills or will we be laying bills over for possible inclusion?
Yeah, great question, Representative Swadzinski. We will just be laying bills over there. And staff can correct me at this point. I don't believe there will be any votes. Ms. Cerbanek, am I being correct in that to the members? Are there any? All right, I see a thumbs up. So there will be no votes on Friday. Every bill will be laid over, possible inclusion. All right, members, thank you so much for your work today. And with that, we are adjourned.